The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the American Citizens Podcast. My name is Gray. I am joined by Josh in the thick of about 800 games that are happening this month. We are going to slowly trudge our way through all that has happened, and we are recording this after the first Tottenham. I feel the need to specify, in case anyone is listening to this, you know, like a week in the future, 2 weeks in the future, and how there are going to be about 17 games against Tottenham in the next week. This is the first one. And what we're going to be doing today for you is we're going to be covering the first one. We're going to be covering the FA Cup semifinal. We're going to look ahead at the FA Cup final briefly. And more pertinently, the second leg against Tottenham, the league game against Crystal Palace, and everything else that's coming our way in the next couple of weeks. This is the added, the benefit and drawback of going for a quadruple is that the good news is that there's basically going to be constant games every 3-4 days. The bad news is that every one of them is life or death. So let's go back a little bit, because I want to save the Tottenham stuff for a sort of bulky review preview situation. So I do want to talk briefly about the FA Cup semifinal against Brighton, which was kind of a non-event, honestly.
Yeah.
They scored in 5 minutes, and they looked like they just sort of, the rest of the game was, that's that. And we got our goal. Frankly, not a very impressive performance. And there's two ways to look at that. There always are. One, it's great if you can play nowhere near your best and win without breaking all that much of a sweat. And two, that really wasn't all that great. Is there one that you emphasize more than the other?
At this stage, they won. Like, I actually prefer uneventful games at this stage, because that means players aren't at risk of getting injured. You're not seeing a lot of 50-50 tackles, which potentially lead to injury or things like that. I prefer this type of game, especially against the type of opponent that, like, look, City obviously want to win the FA Cup. We've discussed that. We've discussed that Pep is a romantic for these types of things. There's really no need to beat on about that. But do you really want, like, you look at what happened to Tottenham. They're without Harry Kane for the second leg. City got a break. But speaking strictly about what happened to Tottenham, that's the kind of crap you don't want. You don't want to lose your players in these games. So Gabriel Jesus scores 4 minutes into this one, and City basically sit back on their ass and ride it out. I'm okay with that. If it leads to a win, whatever, man. I mean, at this point, I would rather have healthy players and a victory than a 10-0 win where everybody goes all out and somebody comes up with a knock and can't play in a really meaningful game. Because, I mean, there's three games against Tottenham plus the Derby all within a month. I mean,
and that's not even counting the other games that are, you know, not quite as high quality opposition, but also, like, we're at the point where it's just sort of like, look, if Liverpool drop points, great, but you shouldn't bank on it, and you can't really afford to drop any of your own at this point.
City need to take care of what they can take care of. They got five matches remaining, and they really can't drop points in any of them. This obviously doesn't count towards that five, but it does affect the five, because it's one more game that City have to play in. I'm fine that they really didn't do anything and beat Brighton. I honestly am. I'm not going to get worked up over that.
Yeah, that's me too. They haven't played. You've seen the game management skills come into play since the international break. Fulham, 30 minutes, 2-0 up, rest, basically. Cardiff, they're actually a bit harder work, as I recall. I don't remember when they scored. Let me look that. Oh, they scored 6 minutes. That's right. They did score. That was basically they scored 6 minutes and added a second at the break, took the second half off.
And Cardiff had a red card somewhere right in there.
Score within 5 minutes. He's off. Control the game, you know. It's all been very game manager-y. And they haven't even conceded a goal in any of these games. It's not like they've been, like, in danger of losing them, really. They've just...
Cardiff managed 4 shots on goal in that game. Or, excuse me, 4 shots, 1 on target.
It just hasn't really been... They haven't been pushed all that hard in these games, which is exactly what you want this time of year. I mean, if you can go up 2-0 inside a half hour and then just sort of ease off, that's the dream. That's the ideal scenario for you at this point in any game because you've got so much coming. And frankly, I think they've managed it pretty well. So I too am okay with that. And I have always subscribed more to the mark of as long as it doesn't become a habit, if you can win ugly. The great teams win ugly. Then you're not going to be at 100% every single game, especially at this time of the season, and especially with as many games as they've played. So you take them any way you can get them. If the derby, if Palace this weekend is a scrappy 1-0 in which they play like crap but they win the game, I will not have any complaints. That's just kind of where we are at this point in the season. They call it the business end for a reason. Everything is going to be a bit more difficult. Everyone's a bit more tired. You manage what you can manage, and you take the wins however you can get them. A bit more pragmatic than perhaps we're used to from City, but this is also not a scenario that any team is used to. As far as this many games with this much on the line at this stage of the season. So... totally fine with me. I'm not going to lose any sleep over that Brighton performance. Because it's almost case in point, yeah, they actually kind of can beat them in their sleep.
Yeah.
That's basically what that was. I don't have a lot to say about the game, except that it's really, really, really great that Kevin De Bruyne looks like he's back on form at
the
perfect, perfect time of the season, because he's basically had an unintentional rest here.
Yeah, and City,
part of the season.
City look like they could use him right now, which I'm sure we're going to get to. But, just the creativity from De Bruyne, his ability to cross. City are doing what they did last year, not to the extent that they did, but assuming they beat Palace, they go back on top. If everything plays out, even if Liverpool win all their games, City win all their games, City wins the title. So you can't really fault City, you know, doing that. I look at what City probably need in a couple of these upcoming games, and I'm really thankful that we're starting to see De Bruyne return to form, because the City are winning these games, but just like with Brighton, just like with Cardiff, they're not dominating. Well, Cardiff, they did 79% possession.
Yeah, they haven't blown anybody away. I mean, they completely controlled the game, but they haven't... And the story of a couple of these games, especially the Cardiff game, was, well, they could have had 5.
Right.
Because they could have, but they didn't, because Gabriel Jesus is something I would like to talk about later on.
Why don't we talk about Jesus right now? I mean, so that way we can put off the talk of
thing. I'm good with that. They haven't blown anybody away since the 7-0 against Schalke last month. And before that, they hadn't blown anybody away in a while either. It's... Which, again, okay, it's fine. Let's talk about Gabriel Jesus, who cannot stay on... Yeah. I think at this stage of the season, with so much on the line and the margin so fine, your frustration with the guys who aren't up to the task really starts to grow more than it would otherwise earlier in the season, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, because, well, I'm there with Mark.
You know, it's a lot easier to forgive a couple mediocre performances in say, October or November, than it is in April when you're fighting for four competitions and you really can't afford to lose any game if you want to win them. Fighting for three competitions, they already won the one. But, and I think that frustration really bears itself out with Gabriel Jesus. The Guerrero suffers the knock against, I think it was Cardiff that he had a minor. Was it Cardiff or Fulham? Either one. I don't remember. He suffered a minor, you know, a minor thing that's kept him out for a couple of games, but he obviously played against Tottenham. It seems to be he's back in the team. But you are forced in those situations to rely on Gabriel Jesus. And he is, you know, it's the
it was Fulham.
It was Fulham. Okay.
Yeah, he substituted during the second half of Fulham.
Because Jesus could have scored four against Cardiff, and I think he scored, did he even score one? I don't think so. No, he didn't. So, and that's kind of the part of the problem here.
Well, Bernardo being injured doesn't help either, because he's been an engine for City.
It does not help. But Bernardo, I believe, was playing against Cardiff in a game where... Was he playing? Let me confirm this. No, he wasn't, but that was because of rest, not injury. But the point stands is that, yes, Jesus scored against Brighton, the only goal in the FA Cup semifinal, in a chance that he basically had to convert. If he'd missed it, frankly, it would have been miss of the season candidate. But he's just... It's the worst combination of two items for any striker. First of all, he can't stay onside. I started counting in the Tottenham game when he came on. I think he came on with like 10, 15 minutes left. And I said, look, he's going to be caught offside seven times in this 15 minutes. And he didn't get to seven, but he got pretty darn close. I think it was like four in a span of not much over 10 minutes. And then when he gets the chances, he does not convert them reliably. I'm not, you know, he's 22 years old. I get that. He's young. But you need something more reliable if Aguero is hurt. And Aguero has a long injury history, and we both know this. And he's past 30 now. And we are to the point where I think Pep knows this too, considering how often it has been said that they are going to buy a forward this summer. Gabriel Jesus ain't it as far as Sergio Aguero relief goes. Not reliably. He's going to have some really good games, but he's also going to have these stretches like the one he's in now where he can't buy one unless it's put on a plate for him. And frankly, we're in the part of the season where you need something more reliable than if it's put on a plate for him, he'll probably score it. But otherwise, you know, that won't do. You cannot blow as many chances, and I just don't feel comfortable with him leading the line at this point.
No, nor do I. I never have, if we're being honest. Listen, when Jesus first came to the squad, there was a novelty, and it was almost like Iheanacho, like, oh, you know,
there was some life there when he came, because at that point, Aguero was still struggling to come to grips with what Guardiola wanted.
Right.
And he put Jesus in there, and Jesus seemed to get it a bit more instinctively. And it's funny in retrospect how I believe his first goal for the club was ruled out for offside. It was kind of a sign of things to come.
Right.
But you know, at that point there was an energy, you know, he was lively. The link-up play seemed to work better with him and the team. Well, you know, now Aguero has shown what a player who can do all that but also score tough chances looks like.
Right.
And it looks a lot different.
Well, Jesus to me is an interesting player. I don't think he's a natural scorer. I think there's an argument to even be made that he's probably he may be somebody that would be better served in a different position. I don't know if he's capable of doing that. But I'm with you in that once there's relief and Aguero cannot come on the pitch and you need to have somebody relieve him, Jesus doesn't even come close to giving you what you lose with Aguero. And it doesn't help I think that many times when Jesus plays, there's sort of a secondary lineup out there as well. You get Mahrez on the pitch, and I don't necessarily know that the service into the box helps Jesus any, but you are right about him having a massive problem drifting off sides over and over and over and over again.
It's so infuriating. And every single time it happens, you know, you don't even get another chance to attack. It's just the whole attack, just done. You're done.
Yep, it's over.
That's the end. I would, you know, I could probably live with one and not the other, but it's just almost impossible to cope with the offside, because it basically, we don't, you know, I watched a lot of basketball in the last month, and so, you know, turnovers, huge deal. Turnover margin, such a big deal. If you can limit your turnovers in a basketball game, you're in pretty good shape. We don't count turnovers in the same traditional way in a soccer game or in football.
We should, honestly. We really should.
You know, we probably should. And every time he's caught offside, it's a turnover, basically.
Yep.
It's a turnover because the other team gets a goal kick or a free kick, from basically in the box. It is a, Guardiola is one of the worst things in the world you can do in a Guardiola team is give away possession. And this is a situation where, you know, if you give away possession, you better go win it back. You can't win it back in this situation. It's just a giveaway. It's just an ending possession with no end product and no real benefit. And it's baffling that it hasn't even improved. If anything, it feels like it's gotten worse.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's always had a problem with it, but it just feels like it's even worse now.
Yeah, the frustrating part, I think, is that when you have these games where goals are a novelty and you're trying to just get one across the line, and there's no understating how frustrating these turnovers can be. It like you've already said, it peters out the attack. And I wonder, after a while, does it start to affect the other players and their service to Jesus? Do they then become hesitant to fire the ball up to him because they're not sure if he's going to be offsides? You know, and a lot of that is sort of looking up and seeing the pitch, a lot like you're talking about with basketball. You have point guards. Their job is to see the floor. Similar to what De Bruyne does with City, Bernardo does with City, their job is to see the entire pitch. That, you know, they're trying to see where players are going to be before they're going to be there. And if you have a guy that's perpetually offside, that to me feels like it could then become a source of frustration for the other players who are trying to feed service into him. And those services may stop coming, or they may feel like, I'm not sure. And he was onside, and it would have been a great chance, but they didn't fire it in because they're not sure, and he's traditionally offside a lot.
Yeah, that's a really good point that I hadn't really even thought of. And it's, you know, imagine if you're Kevin De Bruyne for a second, because you are one of the best passers in the world, especially from a deeper line position. And you... And you swing in all these balls, these really good balls, that are put on a plate, you know, like the one in the FA Cup semifinal that was mercifully onside and mercifully did count. But you know, how many of those have you wasted on a player who's offside, who can't stay onside? And if you're De Bruyne, you need to be in sync, in rhythm with the guys on your forward line, with the guys that you're passing to, whoever they may be. Jesus just seems to disrupt that rhythm. For that reason and other reasons, there's a couple players on this team right now, and I think you can guess the other one, that I just find really disruptive to City's attacking play. Gabriel Jesus is one of them because of the offside problem And frankly, because he's not a reliable finisher at this stage of his career. No. Will he ever be? I don't know. I truly don't know.
I don't think he will be. I don't, because at this stage, you and I have a general rule of about 2+ years for players, right? That's our rule. We with Mahrez, you and I are fed up, but we've both agreed that this is year one for him. And we are going to wait until year two before we levy judgment, but both of us have said there's not going to be a lot of patience for Mahrez in year two, and we don't have a lot of hope for it, because generally, by the end of year one, if a guy's getting it, it shows, and he's not getting it. But this isn't about Mahrez yet.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. This comes back to Gabriel Jesus, and I think, you know, this guy has been with City since Pep came.
January of 2017, to be exact.
I mean,
that's 2 years. We're over 2 years.
Yeah, we're over 2 years. This is going to be the end of his third year with City. For the most part. I don't know, but I don't have a lot of faith. I know, but Guardiola traditionally will stick with these types of players. I mean, he did it with Müller at Bayern. And I think that Müller is sort of a similar player to Gabriel Jesus. Müller was a bit more reliable, I think, at first. But what he's become and what Gabriel Jesus has become are sort of, to me, somewhat similar. And I think that the interactions with he and Guardiola have become similar to that. But I think there can be no mistaking that City need forward help. Jesus, look, even if you say, I am comfortable with Jesus, but I'm not sure about Mahrez, you still have two players that are huge question marks, and both of them there at the forward position. And the funniest part about this entire conversation is that you and I started the year bitching over the fact that they went after a position of strength rather than a position of need. And it's turned out the complete opposite way.
It's true. And I was never even really, you know, I'm still not to Mahrez, but I was never keen on the Mahrez signing anyway. I think you can go back to me, like, what was happening, literally on this podcast, just saying the word meh. But I think Jesus will get another year. I mean, you think about Raheem Sterling, who had his breakout year, he's 22, 23 years old, last season. He turned 23 last season, turned 24 this season. Time is running low for Gabriel Jesus to sort of get his breakout, his consistent, you know, to do what Sterling did, which is essentially transform yourself from clearly talented but unreliable in the box into clearly talented and also super reliable in the box and the team's best winger and one of the first names on the team sheet. That is a transition that Raheem Sterling made last season. He turned 23 last season. Gabriel Jesus turns 23. I can't type today. Gabriel Jesus turns 23 a year from now. He just turned 22 a week and a half ago. So he is a little younger than Sterling was when Sterling made his breakout, which is why I think he will get one more year. But as with Riyad Mahrez, I think next year is going to be either a show me something or I will show you the door year.
Yeah.
To put in that sort of way. And he's going to face added competition because I do think City will sign a forward. I've read it several times now. I don't remember. I mean, Luka Jovic keeps coming up. I'm not going to.
So same with Joao Felix. I've seen.
I'm not going to opine on guys that I haven't really seen play.
Yeah, I haven't watched Benfica.
Idiot. I don't know how these guys are, but I do think that no matter what, they're going to sign a forward, and I think that Gabriel Jesus is going to face a lot of competition because there was a time that it looked like he'd supplanted Sergio Aguero.
Yeah.
And that time has passed. It is a long time ago now. And I think he's going to have to fight for it. And we'll see you know, I will see what that does for him, but
I'm not optimistic.
Oh, lad, come on.
I'm not optimistic, but at the same time, I'm not pessimistic. Like,
I just don't know.
He's
clearly talented. He's a clearly talented guy.
Yeah.
But there's more, you know, we, how many guys have we seen with talent that couldn't put it all together and reach their potential?
See, you brought up a really good point about Raheem Sterling. Like, Raheem Sterling was obviously here before Pep came, even though... Yeah.
There were people who wanted to boot Raheem Sterling out the door when Pep came in, and there were people who still wanted to boot Raheem Sterling out the door after Pep's first season.
Yeah. And Raheem Sterling, man, the knock on him was that that kid couldn't finish. Like, he would never be a finisher. And holy shit, has that narrative changed. Raheem Sterling, last year alone, for him, in some of the critical goals that he scored – to help City. I mean, it makes you want to give Jesus another year because he's had that mixed success like Sterling did. You know, you feel
there's enough there. You've seen enough from that makes you think he can do it.
Yeah, I have. I like him. I don't, honestly, if you told me that City are going to sign a forward and somebody has to go, I am not pushing Gabriel Jesus out the door. It is Riyad Mahrez going on a loan. He's out the door. Like, it's not even up for discussion with me.
If we're breaking our own rule, then yeah, he's the guy I'm shoving out the door as well.
Yeah, I honestly think that they should. I think that they should move Mahrez out the door and bring in – let Mahrez loan him out to another club in the Premier League and see if this is this an attacking style thing. Does he lack confidence? Does he feel like the money he signed? Like, I don't know what's going on with Riyad Mahrez. That's the thing.
It's too late for a loan. He is what he is. I mean, we've seen him at Leicester. We saw him.
Yeah, but people would take it. You're telling me nobody would want Riyad Mahrez on a loan?
I think it might have to be a loan because his wages are probably high. And this season has done nothing to help his value. That's the problem.
I think there are
people who would take him, but I think you've kind of, if you're looking for...
Is it like an Eliakim Mangala situation? Because I'm still trying to figure that one out. apparently we just re-signed the dude, which...
Yeah, and he hasn't played since.
Manchester City legend, Eliakim Mangala, dude.
They must be really, really married to the idea of the $8 million that they might get for him. To throw out a number.
Oh, my God.
Boy, is that really... Are you really...
That was the oddest... Like, what was your reaction when Manchester City tweeted that? Like, because I had to do a double take to make sure it was a verified account.
Wasn't April 1st?
Yeah, I had to do a... I needed to see the check mark, you know? Like...
Right. I was the same way. And I was just like, okay. I'm not going to, the world is on fire enough as it is. I'm not going to spend time thinking about this and driving myself further toward the brink of insanity.
Yeah.
Because that's how I would, you know, that's what would happen. It's just like, the gif of like the wherever it's from with all the equations on the screen and the eyes, like, going back and forth looking at... That was me. That was me at that moment.
See, if I had to describe it in a GIF, I'm Peter Griffin just sitting there blinking. Like, what?
That's... Yeah.
The reactions to that on Twitter, though, were worth... Manchester City, I suppose, re-signing him. Like, apparently it doesn't affect them in the slightest, so I don't give a crap how they want to spend their money. Like,
oh, yeah.
They have enough
Eliakim Mangala is not going to bankrupt the club. It's just a bit weird.
It is. And I'm not even sure where he's playing. Is it still Everton?
No, he's still at the club. He just hasn't played.
Oh, he's back at City. I thought...
he's at City. He's been here the whole time. I just don't think he's done anything.
Okay. All right, then.
I hope he's enjoying it.
I mean, if you can get paid...
He should write a diary.
If you can get paid...
He should become the new Marty Perrineau.
Basically, if you can get paid what he's getting paid, to do what he's doing, I mean, sign me up.
Yeah, more power to you.
I mean, look, I mean, the competitor in him wants
I'm sure he wants to play. Yeah. I don't want to make him out as, like, some mercenary who's just, like, sitting in a recliner.
No, and we know athletes. We cover athletes.
These guys are professionals. They want to play.
Yeah.
But
they're not trying to sit on a bench. But
there are worse lives to lead.
Basically, that's where I come down on it. Like, this, the whole signing of Mangala, like, it doesn't make sense to me, but okay. Obviously, Pep sees something.
Or
maybe he's one hell of a scout team guy.
Or Cheeky sees something in the transfer market. That's the only other thing I can think of.
I can maybe he's one hell of a scout player. You know, like
maybe he's a glue guy.
Yeah, like he's a guy that drives your team. Your first,
the heart of the practice squad.
Yeah, like that's the only thing I can come up with for Mangala. But drifting back to Gabriel Jesus.
Yeah, let's finish that up, because I think we're roughly in agreement on this.
Yeah. I want to see more from him. I know he can do more. Let's see. But Riyad Mahrez, I'm going to have zero patience for coming next year. I mean, I'm not going to slate the guy if he has one bad game to start. Like, there's going to be a window that I give Riyad Mahrez, and not every guy is going to be effective every game. That's, you know, that's why you have a team of 11 players to sort of pick up the slack. But if we've hit, you know, the January transfer window and Riyad Mahrez is sitting on two assists and one goal, see ya. Don't care.
Yeah.
Just care.
Mm-hmm. If it's anything like this season, then I think he's out. Man, he's out the door.
Especially if you look at where Liverpool and City are at, like. Right. It's basically emerged that Liverpool and City are going to be the teams who spend the money and hire the coaches to sort of not just win now, but to win in the Champions League as well. That's what Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp have been hired to do. And for the most part, both of those guys are doing what they need to do. So that then puts extra pressure on the players to perform the way they're supposed to perform because of the expectations that both fans for both clubs have for these teams. So, I mean, that we both are in agreement on Gabriel Jesus. We're both in agreement on Riyad Mahrez. Should we move to Tottenham? Should we finally go there? Because it seems like everything
It's been a half hour and we haven't touched it with a 10-foot pole, so it's probably time.
All right, well, let me get out my gloves because I still don't want to touch that piece of shit.
Yeah. I think we both sort of, like, subconsciously put this off out of an avoidance of wanting to deal with this one.
You know what frustrates me about that? That game really should have been 0-0. Like, there was no reason for Son's goal to go in.
It should have, yeah.
Ederson came too far out. He should have stayed where he was. The defense just got picked apart. It was that. It was just a failure of everything, and City hadn't.
It was the one time in the game that City were on the ascendancy, too.
Yeah.
It took them, like, 70 minutes to finally start looking like they had an advantage, and the moment they got it, they got sucker punched on the counter. Anyway, I'm trying to figure out where to go with this, because this was one of those games where as soon as you'd see the team sheet, you think, oh, God, here we go.
Yep. As soon as I saw the team sheet, I knew City were going to lose. I even tweeted it.
The moment you see Fabian Delph at left back.
That didn't bother me. It was the combination of everything that bothered me.
And it was not one thing. I mean, once we knew that Bernardo Silva was out because of injury and not for some odd reason, I was like, okay. Fine, but still, you know.
Sané should have started. It should have been Sterling and Sané. It really should have.
Let's go over this, because did you happen to read Samley's article today on goal?
No, I didn't read his article today, but I've sort of been reading everything else. I haven't gone on my app, goal app today.
He straight up, you know, it wasn't straight from Pep's mouth, but it was clearly well-sourced from the City hierarchy and the City coaching staff. Of what exactly the plan was. And basically, the plan was exactly what happened, more or less. He's prioritizing Palace, Spurs, and United because those are all finals and he doesn't think they can afford to lose any of them. And he thinks they can afford to lose one leg at Tottenham and didn't want to get blown away like he did at Liverpool last year. Now, the question I think in my mind is, it more, you know, he did get the one, you know, they're still in a tie. This isn't last year against Liverpool where it's going to take, you know, a miracle
a lot to overcome this.
A miracle and a half in the home leg to get through this.
Nobody has an away goal advantage right now.
I'm going to read this verbatim. Sources told Goal that the Manchester City boss set out for a tight game against Tottenham on Tuesday and would have been happy with the goalless draw. Which they probably should have had and nearly did have. And frankly, they could have been one up if Aguero, which we have talked about before, converting penalties in big spots. I think we might be having an entirely different conversation if he scores that penalty, which was a penalty, by the way.
Yeah, it was. People are bitching about that. They're like, oh, he slid. I'm sorry. When I slide, my arms don't go in the air. I'm sorry. I have done my fair share of sliding, simply running from the police and playing baseball. That was a completely unnatural position for his hands, and he put it up. That is a penalty. They call it on everyone, man.
I will say the one thing about the penalty awards on VAR in the Champions League is they have been consistent. You can't sit here and say, well, you know, this was, that was. Look, it's been a penalty every time.
It has.
So there comes a point where you have to adapt to the rule. They're clearly going to call it. This is not selective enforcement of a weird rule. They're calling it, get used to it.
They're calling it on everyone, and they're calling it very consistently, like you said. You can go through and find video.
I think we've had this discussion before. I will take a lot of different styles of refereeing as long as it's consistent, as long as you know what you're getting. You know, if you are going to referee a game and call nothing except the most egregious of fouls, all right, just do it consistently. If you're going to whistle everything, okay, just as long as you do it. You know, I have certain complaints with each style, but I think I'm more concerned with consistent officiating than anything else, and they have been nothing but consistent in applying the penalty awards in the Champions League. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it's for me, I've seen so many replays. You know, even just Champions League discussions after, you know, you watch your game and you're watching highlights from other games. This is called every time, guys. It really is. Even for the stupidest reasons, it's called.
The Otamendi one against Schalke.
Yeah, you have to adapt.
You know, I hated it at the time, but now, you know, we're seeing it applied recently, and I was just like, well, all right, fair play. You're calling it. You know, it is what it is. You know, Man United got through the Champions League because of it. And I didn't like it at that time either because, I don't like PSG, but, you know, I always want United to go out. And you look at it, it's like, well, you know, yeah, they're calling everywhere else. You know, you can have the debate over whether this is ruining football on a different day. It's not one I'm particularly interested in having because, you know.
Ruining football is so subjective and stupid. The league's making more money than ever, but sure, okay, this is ruining it.
It's a go-to catch-all phrase for people who are angry online and want you to know it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't interest me in the slightest.
No.
It was a penalty. And if he makes that, suddenly you have a lead and away goal, and it's a completely different tie, and then Guardiola can really, you know, if he was trying to be pragmatic, then he can really go pragmatic.
Yeah.
And maybe we're sitting here talking about City with a 1-0 away victory in the Champions League that, more or less, it doesn't kill the tie, but it gives City a significant second leg advantage because they have an away goal, they have the lead. That is the optimal situation you can go into in a Champions League tie going home.
That's
perfect. And instead, he misses. And it wasn't a great penalty.
No, it wasn't.
The first time that's happened in the Champions League for him.
No.
And I'm not sure if it's mental or what. You know, he didn't really look fit either for much.
No, and the weird part is it looked like he didn't even try and confuse Lloris on that. Like, I saw him staring at the right side, and that's where he went. And it's just like, okay. I mean, I guess.
His last three penalties have been poor. It's that one, and then the one against Swansea that went in off the keeper when he hit the post. He basically missed it. It was an own goal. And then the one in the penalty shootout against Chelsea in the League Cup final that basically Kepa should have saved, but didn't.
Yeah.
There were three really unconvincing penalties. Two of them missed. One of them should have been missed.
Who would you have had taken?
We've done this a million times. You know, I thought immediately, it's going to be Aguero. It seems like such a situational thing for him because we've seen him convert so many of them in the league without really much of a problem.
It feels like big moments get to Aguero. Big moments in big games.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember who else was on the pitch at the time because the problem is City don't have another.
It was the starting lineup at the time because it wasn't.
I'm looking at it. And it's like if not Aguero, who? Raheem Sterling? You know, he scored one, but he's not a regular penalty taker. Riyad Mahrez's biggest penalty, you know, how many penalties has he taken? I can remember.
I don't want Riyad Mahrez taking another penalty.
David Silva, absolutely not.
Oh.
Fernandinho, I think, has made a couple, but again, not a regular. Gundogan.
It's not like you had Gaia out there, you know?
Yeah, Gundogan scored penalties for this team before, and he scored one in the Champions League final. Maybe that's my second choice. But it's, you know,
I'm trusting the Germans. They're pretty good at that penalty thing.
The Germans always make good stuff. The frustrating thing, you know.
The right guy took the penalty. It was just a bad hit.
Yeah, it's just a bad penalty. Hey, you know, if there's a flaw in City, and it's kind of a nitpicky thing, but it is that for a while now, especially since Yaya no longer became a regular and left the team, they haven't had, you know, who's the reliable penalty taker on this team. And I'm not suggesting that you go out and, like, buy a penalty taker for the sake of buying a penalty taker. That's nonsensical and stupid. But there isn't really that one convincing name in the team that you can just, like, point to and say, yeah, he's 99% confident that he's going to make it. With Aguero, I would say, you know, he's 75-80% confident. That's a good ratio, but it's not like the ironclad ratio that you want for a penalty taker.
No, there's a couple things I trust Yaya to do. One is to get upset over petty shit. Two is to bury any penalty he takes. And I forgot the third one, but it was actually pretty funny. I'm sure I'll remember it.
Can you believe he's a pundit now? Of all the people from that era, he's not on the list of people I would expect it to go into punditry.
Oh, yeah, I remember the third one. It's to hit a kid in the face with a random wayward kid. Like, that will forever be the greatest video I could watch Yaya drill that little girl in the face over and over and over. It's just the absurdity of the video. It's the hands hanging in the air after the face. That's
not important enough for that phrase to be taken out of context.
No. And to be clear, like, I know Yaya spent time with the girl. Like, he you know, did a whole thing. But that video itself, just with the arms hanging in the air after the face goes back, it's just a funny video. It's something that you'll... It sucks at the time, but you laugh at it later, you know?
It's fun for the whole family.
As long as everyone's okay, it sucks at the time, you laugh about it later. It's sort of like tripping and falling when you're out and about. You run the risk of these things happening at a sporting event. It's not malicious. Yaya wasn't trying to drill the kid. It was just a rather amusing moment if you kind of have that sort of sense of humor, which I do. And we just lost 20 listeners. but circling back to Tottenham, let's look ahead because we've already looked behind.
Yeah, I mean, my verdict on this is basically okay. If that was the game plan that he wanted to go in with, it mostly worked. Mostly, but you've put yourself in a tough situation, and really. Really, this is the heart of the question for me. This isn't Liverpool. It's not Barcelona. It's not Real Madrid. Are Tottenham worthy of that much respect? They haven't been playing that well lately. I don't know.
Yeah,
These are the questions that he's paid millions of pounds a year to answer, and apparently he decided yes. It was an immensely frustrating game to watch. Because it was, once again, for better or worse, Guardiola compromising on his principles. That was pragmatism, pure and simple. Pragmatism bordering on fear, I guess is the way I would put it. As evidenced by the fact that he didn't make the subs until the 89th minute because he was scared of being picked off for a second on the counter. And I just don't know that Tottenham deserved that much respect.
No, I don't. It's difficult. But you know what one of my biggest frustration with this game is? If I look at every other game that they've played against Tottenham,
that's the thing. They've never had any problem with Tottenham.
Not to this extent. And you suppose...
The first game he played against them and has won. He drew the home game in the first season. But he's won every other game since.
Yep.
Generally quite convincingly.
Yeah.
4-1 and 3-1 last season. He won 1-0 on the football pitch this year. It's just... This isn't like a bogey team that we're looking at. It's not a team they've had immense trouble with.
Yeah, it's... I don't know, man. It's frustrating. What do you think you should do? What would you do if you had control of this team? What would you do for the second leg?
Second leg?
Yeah.
I mean... I think that we will see something much more akin to what we're used to seeing. I think Sané's coming in. I think, I don't know who's going to be fit at left back at this point, but if Mendy's fit, I think Mendy's coming in. I think that we're going to see.
I would honestly play Laporte. Sorry, I was drawing a blank there.
At left back?
Yeah, he has before, and it worked.
Sort of. Didn't work in against Liverpool last year.
No, it didn't work. It didn't work against Liverpool
last year. That was because,
in
fairness, there were a lot of other things that met in that setup that didn't work either. He's clearly tried to reduce this to a one-game final in which they're going to go for it. They're going to go for the jugular. They've put themselves in a very difficult situation, but they know they can beat Tottenham by multiple goals. They've done it before. They did last year. There will be no Harry Kane. We know that much.
Nope.
He's done for the season. I don't know about Dele Alli. He broke his hand in that game. Naturally, that's not really an injury that, you know, in theory, you could find a way to play through it. But that is a question. They've put themselves in a difficult but doable situation. And to be clear, I think they will do it. I said that even in my frustration there after the game. I said I still think they'll go through because they are a lot better than Tottenham on paper if they play to their potential. They've shown that in their head-to-head matchups. But I think they need Aguero to be firing. They need Aguero to be fit and firing. They need De Bruyne. I would drop David Silva straight out. I would drop David Silva and put Bernardo, De Bruyne, and Fernandinho in the midfield with Sané and Sterling on the wings. David Silva hasn't played well for months. Didn't play well on the first leg. He didn't offer really anything. I think that's the blueprint, and I think that's what they're going to do. They are going to go in with guns blazing, and if they lose, they lose. But I think that this is, we play the way we want to play, all that he usually says. I think this is where we see it. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I think City are going to get knocked out. I do. I think it's just going to happen. I mean,
are you looking at something like a 2-1 with Tottenham going through on away goals?
Yeah. I can just see City building up 2-0, the fans celebrating, and then in minute 92.
They are never going to beat typical City out of us, are they?
Nah. Yeah.
This is, this team has not given us a lot of reasons to doubt them, but at the same time, they have put themselves in a tough spot.
Yeah,
I would argue needlessly so, but, you know, whatever.
I think they're going to win the FA Cup. That's to me, a foregone conclusion.
I agree.
I think Pep is going to put out one of his strongest teams, and they should dominate the Wolves and win that game. So there will be a...
Not even the Wolves. Watford won that game.
Excuse me, yeah, Watford, excuse me. Watford, I don't know why. The whole yellow-black scheme confused me.
Well, I mean, Wolves, at 75 minutes, it looked like Watford Wolves were going to win that game.
Yeah, so they've got... You know, as I was saying the Wolves, I was still thinking Troy Deeney, and I'm saying in my head, that's not right. He doesn't play for the Wolves.
Pep has never even dropped points against Watford in the league.
No, and I think that's going to be a foregone conclusion. City.
I don't think it's, you know, nothing's ever a foregone conclusion, because I do think it's Cup Final, Watford will up their game, but City will have had a week off leading up to that. They'll be able to play their strongest team.
Yeah.
If they don't win, I will be very, very, very surprised.
I will be very, very, very angry if it turns out again.
Yeah, it'll be Wigan again, basically. I don't need to do that again.
But I think City are going to knock out the Champions League. I still think they'll win the league, but I think it's going to be tight. I do think Liverpool
will drop on the last day. I think.
I think Liverpool drop points one more time, but so does City. But Liverpool don't lose; they just drop points, mm-hmm. and it comes down to goal differential. That's what I think happens.
That's fair.
And City end up with a treble, but it's a very...
It shouldn't feel disappointing, you know?
No, but it will.
Because that would be complete dominance of the domestic game.
Yeah.
Total and complete dominance. And you take it anyway. I mean, you know. Here's a question I want to ask you. Would you rather win the Premier League or the Champions League this season?
Champions League.
Really?
Yeah.
See, in a vacuum, I agree with you, but that would mean Liverpool winning the Premier League, and I can't cope with that.
Yeah, but in a vacuum, I think it also means that Liverpool would win the Champions League if City don't.
Oh, I don't know if we can assume that.
I think Liverpool will get past Barcelona. But
that'll be fun.
But my God, if Barcelona and City meet in the Champions League final, that would be fun.
That would be a legacy thing, wouldn't it?
It would be so fun. And I honestly, I would want City to win that game, but my God, would I have fun watching it. Okay, Lionel Messi versus Sergio Aguero. Oh God, please. He's win the second leg. And they still got to get through either Ajax or Juventus, you know.
Yeah,
but
that tie is very much open.
Yeah, Juventus got their away goal, but
Ajax put in...
Looked the better team.
I didn't see any of the game, but from what I read on Twitter, Ajax were in control.
The better team, yeah. They controlled the game, and Allegri very much...
Ronaldo's goal was a sucker punch that wasn't entirely deserved.
No, and it was a flying header that he scored, too. It's not like it was a classic Ronaldo goal. But Juventus fans really want Allegri out. I've kind of been watching that situation, especially because the whole Pep rumor came up. That's bullshit. Pep ain't going anywhere. Everybody in the city knows that. That's just Juventus talking to talk. Like, why would Pep even want to go to Juventus? A, he doesn't like Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, he's not a Ronaldo fan. He's a Messi fan. He groomed Messi. You don't just groom Messi, talk about him as the best player of the game, and then go coach the guy who says he's better than him. It just doesn't happen.
You remember how things went personally and tactically at Barcelona with Zlatan and Pep? That's exactly what would happen between Ronaldo and Pep if they ever had to coexist.
Yeah. No, it wouldn't work. And at the end of the day, there's nothing about Serie A that I think appeals to Pep other than the culture of living in Italy. Like, Pep loves that stuff. But Pep just opened a restaurant in Manchester City. It's the toast of the town. He's hauling in money. His wife, I think, is doing some sort of clothing line or some shit. I'm not quite sure. But I know his wife is very active within the community and doing her own thing. What does Serie A provide right now? It has been Juventus, 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 Juventus. And even when somebody finally managed to put together a team that was fun to watch in Sarri, even Napoli couldn't do it. It's just Juventus, Juventus. Like, they've won the damn league, like, how many times? 35, 37 or something? And, like, the next closest person is at, like, 10. Why the hell would you want to go? It's basically like going into the Mountain West and either coaching Boise State or Fresno State. You just have this inherent advantage. Yeah. Or going to the Pac-12 and like Urban Meyer taking over USC. But it's not going to happen.
It would not shock me if this is Pep's last real managerial job and he goes back to the Barca Academy or something after this.
Yeah, I actually think the next step for him is Spain. But I think there's a lot there that needs to happen in order for him to take that over, because that's a very political job. And Pep right now is sort of on the outside looking in because he supports political dissenters. So there's not a lot of incentive for Spain to install him in a position where he would have even a larger voice. Within the Spanish community. I think right now that won't happen, but I do think that is something. You can't tell me that dude isn't looking at a World Cup trophy and saying, I can win that.
No.
He's the ultimate competitor in football, and I truly think that that's the last thing on his bucket list. Whether or not it happens, I think it's sort of a life type thing.
I don't think he'd love it, but I think he would do it. I don't think he'd love it. Because there's not that sort of
face-to-face
training groundwork for months on end.
I think it would be a one-time deal. Like, he would have the job for 4 years, and he would make one goal.
Yeah, we've watched the World Cup. Tactically, it's so rudimentary.
Yeah.
Because they just can't install anything more sophisticated in the time that they have. That'd be interesting.
But if he takes over Spain, those players would already know how to play what he wants to play.
That generation is getting quite old.
It's getting old, but I still believe that those players could play like he wants to play. Look, Cristiano Ronaldo is way older than Messi. Like, he's got so many more accolades to his name because he's older than Messi, I think, by about 5 or 6 years. So, of course, Messi still has more time to play. Messi's like, what, barely 30? He's hitting his prime. Sergio Ramos, you have Gerard. He's kind of whatever, but it's not like Barca is suffering right now. It's not like they are. And I know that they have players, from everywhere, but there's still that Spanish base at Barca and Real Madrid. And I think, yeah, these players are going to know how to play possession football and then turn it up notch. Like, they can do it. I mean, I believe that. Like I said, I really think this comes down to whether or not Pep can get along with those that are in charge of the Spanish team, whether he can get along with people in the Kingdom of Spain, so on and so forth.
PK has retired from the team.
Yeah, my bad. And David Silva retired.
Sal Silva's retired. I'm not sure about Sergio Ramos. I don't remember.
I haven't seen anything from Ramos.
I don't think he has retired.
I don't think he's announced it yet.
Don't know. Busquets is still involved. He's 30. I mean, they've got talent. Like, two of the midfielders, Saul and Rodri. It sounds like City have settled on Rodri as their primary midfield target for summer. I'm not going to sit here and opine on guys I haven't seen play, but everything I've read about him, he sounds perfect.
Ramos would be about 35,
Ramos is 33.
Yeah, he's 33. He would be about 35 around the next World Cup.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking around. Thiago is 28. He could still use him.
Yeah.
His forwards, Spanish forwards, are always an issue. They haven't had a good one since Fernando Torres forgot how to football.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know. Real quick, Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
Away, Sunday. City will play this game before Liverpool play theirs. So they will be throwing the gauntlet down. This is one of the games that City dropped points in last season. But they did win this game in his first season. Obviously, Palace beat City at home earlier this season in a result that looks dumber and dumber with each passing week. What do you think is going to happen here?
I think it's another one of those slow, methodical victories, if we're being honest.
City won, Crystal Palace, no.
Yeah, I think maybe 2-0.
They could score two.
2-0, 2-1 sounds fair to me.
Yeah. Liverpool-Chelsea, do you have a prediction?
I think it's going to be a draw.
Liverpool 3, Chelsea 1.
Okay, that's fair. But look, dude, I don't have a lot of faith in this. Let me rephrase this, man. I want it to be a draw, okay?
We're going to switch roles between the optimist and the cynical pessimist at freely. Because right after we got done saying, I think City are going to go through in the Champions League, he doesn't. We're going to turn this around and say, Josh thinks that Liverpool might drop, they're going to drop points to Chelsea, and I'm sitting here like, solid, a score 7. This is what we do. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at the recent call-ups for Spain, and they really, really do have, like, Cesar Azpilicueta, they've got Nacho, Bartra, Marcos Alonso, Carvajal, Monreal, Isco, I mean, like you said, Thiago, they have Alcalce, Lucas Vasquez. I mean, they have players. It's just a matter of they don't have like this. Alvaro Morato is just not good.
Yeah, I used to be an Alvaro Morata optimist, but that time has passed.
Dude, Morata can kill City, but for some reason, he's incapable of doing anything else. So, I mean, you know, I think City are going to end up with a domestic triple, and they'll go out in the Champions
League. That's a good season. Can we just put that out there right now? That is a good season.
Yeah, but I'm still going to be disappointed. I'm still going to be so disappointed.
That's I would still rate that as a successful season.
Well, I mean, we'll find out, won't we?
We will. We will. This is going to be very much a match-to-match situation here going forward for the next month or so. So.
But that's what makes sports sports.
Yeah, it twists and turns. I don't think that we have seen the last of the high drama for the season. That is for sure.
You know what I want to see in closing this out and sort of turning it on a fun note? I want to see somebody score a goal and then do like an Old Town Road celebration. You know, just an homage to little Nas X. I don't think that'll ever happen because, you know, they have their own music over there. And our music doesn't seem to drift the same way it does here. But I've been on an Old Town Road kick, and yeah, that's kind of what I want. I just want to see somebody do like a TikTok dance.
All right, let's put the information out there, the usual information. You can follow us on Twitter at America Citizens. You can search for us on iTunes and subscribe to us there. They're sponsored by Blog Talk Radio still. And that's it. We'll be at you a lot more. We are hoping to line up some guests so you can add some extra perspective to our podcasting, perhaps some views from overseas. So stay tuned for that. We are going to, when we can, drag you through the end of this season with us. however it plays out. So thanks for listening. For Josh, I'm Gray. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the games, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye, everybody.
Peace.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.